This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And welcome to Wrestling Warzone, a Monday Night Wars podcast retrospective, episode number 15 here tonight. I am JT, alongside my partner on the show, that is Chad Campbell. Chad, how are you?
How's it going?
I'm good.
It's been a long time.
It's been a little over 2 months. October 29th was our last episode.
Three years is a long time.
We've gone through three holidays, Halloween, Thanksgiving, and Christmas, and New Year's have all passed. So how have you been?
I have been a whirlwind, busy at work, the shoot job. I mean, I think we talked about it on our last episode, like October and December, just in general, are the busiest months, just with doing crap. And then I'm in a new position at work, so I've been really busy with that. We have a big deadline that was December 31st, so... That's been occupying most of my time. Been burning a lot of the midnight oil there at the work.
Midnight ride, baby.
A lot of fun.
But so you think it seems like it's cooling down now, though. Maybe we can get to back to a little cadence here, you think?
Yeah, hopefully we can get back to at least, you know, a couple times a month. We should be able to output maybe more. About three times a month is what we was averaging before. So
yeah, that'd be nice. Especially with, as we'll talk about later, our new project that's coming up around 1996. It'd be good timing. As we edge toward that new year on the show to talk about that. We'll get to the show in a minute. So any wacky stories or anything happened to you since we last talked you want to share? I have one.
No, I don't have much going on. I had a pretty low-key holiday and then New Year's Eve. Saturday was a bunch of shenanigans.
I was going to say, I got some cryptic messages from you one of those nights.
Well, so Saturday we went out for one of Jennifer's friend's birthday. I mean, she's turning 36, but it's one of those, like, it's my birthday month, week, you know, one of those people. So we had to get this bus, which they presented it as a party bus. And then they went and picked us up, and it was like a 15-passenger van.
Was the cowboy driving? Because that's a specialty.
It looked like the prison, you know, what transports the inmate.
That's it, those transit vans with no windows. That's what we took to Money in the Bank in Boston a few years
ago. Exactly what it was.
Or TLC, one of those.
Like this huge sliding door.
Yep.
You had to just sort of dive into the back and hope you landed in a seat. So that was a fun night. And that was, you know, like, obviously, with kids and just with age, my drinking is not as up to snuff as it usually is or has been in the past. And that night, I had just the weirdest combo. I usually try to stick to one form of alcohol to prevent getting sick. And I did good Saturday. I did not get sick. I was on the verge. As we was riding back, the car was spinning. But I just had this really weird collection of like IPA, real heavy beers. Michelob was what we had in the van, so old man beer, bourbon, tequila, a martini mixed in there, a shot of vodka.
Sure, you weren't in Nick Duke's van.
it was quite the wild ride, and we also partaked in the Machado special, some karaoke.
Oh, very good.
Was able to dust off my singing chops fresh off the Christmas episode.
Your singing in that almost brought me to tears when I heard it. I was like, it was beautiful. I don't know, between you and Rotella, I'm not sure who touched me more. With Rotella, Do You Want to Build a Snowman? It was like the most touching song I've ever heard.
Yeah, I still have to listen to that. I have to be in the right mind for that.
Oh, yeah. Quite the journey. So did you sing? What did you sing?
So we sung You've Lost That Loving Feeling. Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of a staple. It was a really weird crowd, though. So I didn't even know we were going there. We went out to eat. Like, the plan was we were just going to go out to eat, and then we were planning on going back to their house and hang out. So we were in the back of the van watching the football, all the guys, and all of a sudden we turn into this, like, not really a strip mall area, but it was like one of those areas, like next to a like a grocery store and right. a couple other little stores. And we see La Bamba Mexican restaurant.
Oh, nice.
And it has the neon light that says karaoke that was flashing. So we went into La Bamba. The first guy, as soon as we go in there, the first guy steps up. He's wearing an Affliction shirt, so again he looks like the cowboy.
Perfect.
And he's probably cowboy senior's age around there. And so the guy I was with, he was like, oh, I bet this guy's just gonna be aces. And all of a sudden he starts busting out a Garth Brooks song and was just absolutely awful.
Brutal.
Like brutal out of tune. So I, even in my drunkard state, I feel pretty confident in saying I was one of the highlights of the karaoke on Saturday night.
Well, I don't doubt it. So I have kind of my own drinking nightmare story, but I wasn't drinking. So we went to, a few weeks ago, my wife's friend invited us out to a bar to see a band that she liked, but the bar was in Newport. And, this is like the most Rhode Island thing ever, but it's a bit of a ride. I mean, whatever. It's like 35 minutes, 40
Is that
minutes.
In Rhode Island or Connecticut?
Yeah, it's in Rhode Island. You get to go over the bridge. It's like where all the mansions are and everything.
Oh, okay.
Tennis Hall of Fame. I mean, it's a pretty well-known area. So it's a bar in Newport, and I'm just like, it was like the last thing I fucking felt like doing. Like, I was just tired. Like, I'd been busy. I think it was the week. I forget what weekend it was. I don't know. Maybe 2 weeks after Thanksgiving. Like, we leaned on, like, parents or babysitting a lot. Like, it was just a lot going on. But
yeah.
She really wanted to go, because she was like, well, if we keep saying no, like, we're not going to get invited to things.
Yeah,
like,
you're out.
Yeah, so I'm like, okay. And this is, like, her best friend. So it was supposed to be this big group. And we decided that we were going to take a Lyft or an Uber there. I think we ended up doing a Lyft. So we drive to her apartment complex, and it ends up being me, my wife, her friend, and a coworker of a friend. And then one other lady was going to meet us. Everyone else pretty much bailed. So it was just the five of us there. So we take the Lyft to Newport. And as a result, since I wasn't driving, I was flying on Air Claire, for those that know. So I was not drinking, but I was definitely under the influence. So we get to the bar. And, you know, it's fine. The band's pretty good and whatever. You know, the girls are drinking. Then we're dancing. And we kind of took a break from dancing. We sat down, and my wife's friend, who never, like, I've seen her drink, but never really drink before. Like, and I've known her since I've known my wife, which is, you know, 17 years or whatever. I've never seen her really get, like, bombed. So she comes over, and, like, she just looked like she had seen a fucking ghost. And she's like, Helen, who's, like, the other woman who had come with her own car, is going to take me home. Are you guys okay with just heading back on your own? I'm like, fuck no. Like, I didn't even want to be here. I'm like, we're all going, Helen, right? So we all fucking cash out. And now I'm like, as we get outside the bars, where I realize just how fucked she was, like, I had to basically, like, walk, like, hold her up to get to the car.
Oh, yeah.
And if anyone out there knows Newport, there's a lot of, like, cobblestone, like, walkways. And she had heels on. So it's like, you know, so we get to the car. And we kind of get her tucked into the front seat, and she, before we start to leave, she is like, I'm going to be sick. So we open the door, and she throws up out the door before we leave. I'm like, all right, maybe she's good, right? So we close the door, we put a blanket on, like, we get her all settled in. So we're driving, and she's like out cold. So, like, all right, we're good. We get off the highway, or we're passing an exit, and also she pops up, and she's like, I'm going to be sick again. And we're like, fuck. So, like, this woman, Helen, like, swerves the car to get off the exit, but she doesn't make it. So she, like, throws up in this blanket in her lap.
Oh.
And then we pull off in, like, some fucking, I don't even know what it was, like, the side of some woods. And she's, like, throwing up again on the side. And so as she's doing that, the woman who's driving is like, I'm going to fucking throw up. So she had to like go off to the side, and she didn't end up getting sick, thankfully, but the vomit was making her sick. So then as that's all happening, like the other woman is like trying to clean the seat, and I'm trying to figure out like what to do with all the vomit blanket and everything. So I just decide that we're going to leave it in the woods. So I throw the vomit blanket in the woods. We get her tucked back in the car. She passes back out. Get to her apartment complex. She gets out, and our thought process was, all right, instead of like trying to park, like I'm like pull right up to the front door, near as close as we can get to the front door, and I'll get out with her and hold her here while you go park, and then you guys can like get the doors propped open. So we get out with her, and she's like, I'm going to be sick again. So here we go. It's just me and her. So she starts throwing up, and I haven't held a girl's hair back in a long time, Chad. So here I am. I'm holding her hair back, and I'm standing behind her like, you know, she's bent over. I'm holding her up by her waist behind her, holding her hair. I'm like, if anyone comes by, this is definitely going to be on YouPorn or something. But
where was Megan?
She was like going to get the door open and everything, like the prep. Okay. So, so she probably finishes throwing up. And I'm like, I try and put her arm around me, and I'm like, all right, I'm going to walk you in there. And she's just like dead weight. So I ended up fucking picking her up like you're carrying your bride over the threshold. And I walk her. Thankfully, she's not very heavy. I walk her all the way in. I put her down. We get to the stairs. And, of course, she doesn't have a fucking elevator, and she's on the third floor. So we have to grab one of the other girls, and I'm like, you got to help me. So we each put an arm over the shoulder. And I'm like, it's fucking Weekend at Bernie's, because we're literally like pushing her legs up the stairs while her arms are draped around. Like, she is just dead. And we walk her all the way up, and she just face plans on her bed. And the girl, I stepped out of the room. The girl's kind of got her prepped and set up the bucket. And one of the other women ended up staying over. But yeah, it was a shit show, man. I mean, it was one of those nights where, like, you know, when you're looking to fucking drink, like she was looking to fucking drink that night. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what she had going on, but she was like looking for it.
Yeah, I think that was the thing with Saturday. It felt, I mean, because like I said, I was definitely drunk, but I was in much better shape than most of the other companions. So we had one guy, his mom just died like so he was 2 days before. So, and we had the deliberation, another deliberation in the car on whether you could have a funeral on a Saturday or not. I don't know why I keep getting involved in those.
Well, you know what? Mania is a MetLife again this year, so it's come full circle.
Yeah, everything's come full circle again, where they're on the protocol of what days you can have a funeral on. I think they decided on Friday.
Hey, I don't know. I know is, once you decide that, Chad, it's time to get a little arrogant in 2019.
Oh, man. And so, I mean, the birthday girl, she's a full-size gal.
Yeah.
So her husband, Ed LaBamba, did give her a lap dance.
Oh.
And he's 45 and probably about 125 pounds wringing wet. So it was quite the scene where – and we went to a Cajun restaurant, so we got beated there.
I believe it's pronounced Cajun.
Cajun. So in the course of this lap dance in the middle of a Mexican restaurant while somebody was singing karaoke, there was a shoe in the middle of the floor. Somebody had three random dollars. The beads were scattered everywhere. The girl's shirt came up. It was ugly.
It was ugly.
Right. It was definitely a parents' night out.
Sad what we've become.
So New Year's Eve was very low key. I had two bourbon and cokes that I nursed while we went to Hibachi.
Yeah, I ate about a fucking pound and a half of Chinese food. Disgusting. So anyway, New Year, focused on being healthy. But yeah, that as soon as we pulled over, I am like I'm trying to focus, you know what I mean? Like to help out. Yeah. And I'm just like, I just wanted to either sleep or just like chill. And I'm like, fuck, I got to help these fucking people.
Well, yeah. I think for me, it's like, I mean, you know, when you were young, like you'd go to the club, right? Yeah. And then when me and Jennifer got married, I used to think like, oh, when other people like their weddings, that was kind of my like show out date.
Right.
But now that I'm in my 30s, not many people are getting married, so that's kind of dried down. So when you get these opportunities,
you gotta take it.
You gotta take advantage. Yeah,
you gotta make it count. All right. So anyway, hopefully everyone's still with us. It's been a while. We had a lot to catch up on. But we are going to dive in. So if you're new to the show, thank you. And what we do here every week is we're moving weekly through the Monday Night Wars. We started with the second Nitro, which coincided with the first time that it was head-to-head with Raw. And we're doing all of the Raws and Nitros, as well as the pay-per-views, and I guess eventually Clashes, right? We're going to get there.
Yeah, there should only be, I think, two or three. But yeah, I guess we'll touch on those when we get there.
Okay. But there is a very famous individual on the Nitros that we watch in WCW programming in this time who unfortunately passed away earlier today, and that is Mean Gene Okerlund, the one and only. So I thought we'd take a minute here, Chad, to talk about him and what he meant both to WWF, WCW, AWA, and beyond. Obviously, he's one of the most well-known wrestling figures because I've seen it everywhere. It's almost like on the Savage Warrior level of notoriety that I've seen. Like our local NBC affiliate had a thing about it. I'm watching the, you know, I kind of have in the background here the Big East game, and it's on the Fox Sports
online. I saw him. Yeah, he's on the tracker. Yeah,
so it's out there, and obviously a legendary voice, infamous voice. And when you think it, you know, it seems like hyperbole. And if you know Chris Zellner, it's a lot of hyperbole. But his he had tweeted, I thought it was a poignant comment today, about just how important Gene was to the development and explosion of the WWF in the 80s. And he thought he was even more important than Hogan. I think that's probably a debatable point, but I don't think the point he's making is lost. Is just how important Gene was as a voice, as a legitimate voice, as to what he meant to the wrestling business throughout his time in the AWA. And if he's jumping ship, I think it helps legitimize the WWF as a whole. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you think of the AWA defections, it's certainly Gene, Bobby, and Hogan.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I don't think either any one of those is like egregiously bigger than the other one.
Yeah.
You know, I think they're all actually in the same spectrum, which seems a little silly looking at it on the surface, but if you watch the AWA product in the late 70s, early 80s, I mean, it's right there and in many ways feels more cutting edge, more aggressive than WWF, certainly in the waning days of Backlund's reign. So it really kind of is a testament to Gene that he was willing to jump,
mm-hmm.
kind of became a name for himself, you know, in three different places. I don't think... I mean, it's tough to think of somebody that was that prominent in three different promotions.
Right.
They were all kind of at their peak. I mean, like Bobby, mm-hmm. I would say Gene was more successful in WCW than Bobby.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, really, I don't think Bobby has it. I'm kind of going through my Rolodex. I don't know.
You could argue that size.
Yeah,
and you could argue that Gene was kind of the face of, like, Nitro. I mean, we're seeing it, right? He's all over these shows. He's shepherding the show. And he's there almost to the end. Like, I know they phased him out, like, in the last year or two when Bobby goes down, too. But I think Gene's on almost right up to the final days. And then, of course, they have the famous return at WrestleMania 17, which was awesome, too, where they call the Battle Royal. But just as important to him on screen in WCW, I believe he did a ton, like, backstage, too, like, with some production stuff. And he also owned the piece of the Hotline. So, like, the Hotline was a big business to him. And that was a dominant force on WCW TV. Like, the Hotline is everywhere on WCW TV, and he was a big piece of that. So he was big into, like, the rumor and the news stuff before the internet really blew up as well. So, I mean, he played a big role in both in all three companies in various ways.
Yeah, I think the best thing about Gene and kind of his lasting legacy is, one, he always kind of looked the same. So I mean, even like in 2001 when he comes out for WrestleMania 17, he doesn't look that much older than in 1984 or whatever.
Right, he's kind of got the yarn thing going on, where he looked older before, so when he ages, he doesn't look as old. Now, if you watch Legends House, he's aged.
Legend. And did you see the clip of him hosting Vintage that he was still doing for, like, overseas syndication?
Yeah, he hasn't looked great.
So he did not look good. Well, he kind of had,
like,
that.
In Legends House, he kind of had, like, the big gout hand, too, like, going on. Like, he's, like, one arm's, like, way bigger than the other. I mean, I'm sure, look, he was a known partier, right? I mean, so I think probably just years of drinking.
I mean, 76, I was actually a little surprised.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd have kind of pegged 80s, I think, for Gene. Mm-hmm. Just because, I mean, I was a kid and he felt like an old guy, you know? Right. I mean, felt like close to my grandpa, and my grandpa's almost 90. So
yes, I mean, if you think, say, call it WrestleMania 5, you know, 30 years ago, you know, he was only 46.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
it's crazy, yeah, to think. But no, I mean, a big part of our youth, a big part of our childhood, and with him, Gorilla and Bobby all gone, it's kind of the voices of a generation of fans who grew up in the WWF.
Yeah, you're starting to really, I mean, it's starting to really dwindle from that, the kind of cornerstone people of that rock and wrestling era. Mm-hmm. It, you know, it's kind of Hogan and not much else.
DiBiase,
as well,
I guess. Like,
yeah,
Jake.
Maybe DiBiase.
Somehow.
Yeah. Jake's going to outlast them all.
Those might be the three, really. I mean, yeah, because Savage is gone, Piper's gone.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say those are probably at this point the three kind of biggest.
I guess Shawn and Brett are still there, but they're kind of a little bit later than them.
Yeah, I'd say that's a later and way late. I mean, I honestly, like, I think that's one thing with Gene. Like, if Shawn Michaels passed away, mm-hmm, I mean, maybe now, but let's say he passes away in, I don't know, 25 years or whatever. Like, I don't know if the coverage for him would be as strong as it is for somebody like Gene.
Not outside.
Like, I think Okerlund's more of a household name. I mean, like, my brother texted me. Now, he'd obviously know who Shawn Michaels is, but right. I mean, it's not like he's checking the Observer or Cape Side Seats to find out that, you know, Gene passed away. So he saw it somewhere.
Yeah, I don't think there's too many guys left that are going to, like, national headlines. You know, Hogan, obviously.
Flair,
Austin. Yep. You know, probably the other one, and Vince, right? I mean, beyond that, maybe The Undertaker, like, maybe. But
yeah,
I think
I'd say Undertaker more than like Shawn and Brett, but yeah,
for sure. And then coinciding with that was a rough day in entertainment. So three celebrities that were 76, all passed away.
And the list
creepy.
Is pretty hefty of other celebrities that are 76.
Right.
It's kind of daunting.
Hopefully it's not a thing. So, Marty Funkhauser from Curb Your Enthusiasm. That was a tough one for me. It might have actually been tougher than Gene, that he passed away. I'll let you start because I'm kind of gathering.
Well, I mean,
Bob
Einstein
was the comic.
Kind of, you know, I thought Gene was older. I didn't think Marty was 76. Right. I didn't know how old he was. I mean, I'm not familiar with him except for as Marty and Curb. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, that was kind of one of those deaths where it's like, you know, if that show does come back, it's probably not going to be the same with him not in there.
No,
like,
I agree.
He's definitely a, you know, you could say a complimentary bit character, but pretty integral to the later seasons of that show, and brought a lot of comic relief when he was on stage, screen.
He is brilliant on that show, and I read a kind of fun fact that I didn't realize. He didn't debut until season 4, but I think he's pretty synonymous with it, which is, so it tells you how heavily he was used. I'm curious if, because they are doing another season, so I'm curious if they're going to reference him as dead or if they're just going to kind of not mention him at all, you know, if they'll just move on without him. So he was a pretty legendary writer and comedian, comic actor, had his parents were in the business as well. And because I was reading up on his bio today, and of course, infamously before Curb was probably most known as Super Dave. I don't know if that was in your wheelhouse at all. He had a show.
No.
So he did a show on USA, like early to mid 90s, I think, Super Dave's. I forgot the name of the show was, but it was around the Duckman and Weird Science, like that era. Like, so I want to say 93-ish, right around when Raw started, maybe. And I enjoyed the show. It was real funny. It's like, you know, real campy, slapsticky humor. Super Dave's Vegas Spectacular, maybe? 95? That might have been it. So he had a bunch of different shows as Super Dave. But really, it was just, you know, meant to be like who's the stunt guy? I'm trying to think of his name. Evel Knievel. So it was meant to be like Evel Knievel. It was a parody, basically. So he'd wear the big crazy suit and do this shit that always went wrong, and he'd survive and everything. So, but no, obviously the legendary joke you've heard played out many times at Place to Be podcast was probably his best scene with Jerry Seinfeld. He legit cracks up Jerry Seinfeld in the scene. He breaks him with the joke. So that was really sad. And the reason I felt that was almost sadder than Gene, because I think you mentioned, like, he seemed younger than Gene in ways, but Gene didn't shock me. It was sad, but didn't didn't really surprise me because I knew how he had looked, and I was surprised he had been hanging on. I didn't realize that Einstein was sick.
I guess he had leukemia. Yeah, no idea.
He definitely looked rough in that last curb season. Like, you could tell, like, he wasn't looking as well. So it'll be curious how they handle it. But, yeah, so that shook me up because I was a big fan of him on curb and in general. So that was sad. And then the last one to pass away was the captain from Captain into Neil. So that was the third, who was also 76. And whenever I think of Captain into Neil, I think of the first Kevin Kelly show, because that was on the headlines on that show. We talked about them getting divorced. And that was the kickoff to the Kevin Kelly show. So anyway, whenever I hear that, you know, Love Will Keep Us Together, I think of them. I think of that first episode. And his real name was Daryl Dragon. And like, how do you have the name Daryl Dragon and then go by a nickname, the captain, without using Daryl Dragon? That's like an awesome name.
And like, they were married, right?
Yes.
So why didn't they just call themselves the Dragons?
Right. That would have been great. And they were married for a long time when they got divorced. Because I remember Kevin and I talking about that. It's like, kind of, what's the point of getting divorced at this point? Because they were married. It was something like, 39 years they were married.
Woo.
So it's January 16th, 14, right? Right around when Kevin Kelly show
debuted. Yeah, that's right, debut.
Yeah.
Royal Rumble in Pittsburgh time. Yeah.
So he had Parkinson's. So I think a lot, you know, obviously he was not well for a while, but so the captain has passed away. But I compared in our chat to Ricky Steamboat, you know, having a great wrestling name and then kayfabing his name.
Dick Blood.
Yeah, Dick Blood. How do you have the name Dick Blood and then kayfabe it? Same with right. Denny Dragon here, whatever his name is. Yeah. So it's Daryl Dragon. So anyway, rest in peace, all three. Great legendary entertainers in their own way. Gene will obviously be missed. I'm sure we'll get a bunch on the WWE Network around him. I would think we'll get a kind of a hidden gems collection, or, you know, one of those like they do when the guys pass away. He's definitely one. So
I mean honestly, of my childhood, I kind of go back and forth between him and Gorilla as far as which announcer is like the announcer of my childhood or the voice of my childhood. It's one of those two, and probably Gene, just from the amount of time he was kind of visible. And like I said, like when I started really getting into WCW, he was around there too. So
just
very prominent in a lot of my wrestling fandom.
I think what gets lost in it too is just what a good hype man he was. I mean, just good at hyping the shows. Just like a one man fucking pitch, you know? Like, they could throw him in front of those monitors, and he could sell the shit out of any angle, any pay per view. You know, don't wait for the 11th hour, order today. No, you know, I mean, you can remember all the stuff you would say. You know, I mean, and just to, you know, as an interviewer, the way he would tee guys up and set them up and play the straight man was just so perfect. I mean, just all the legendary interviews you think of, you always picture him there with the guys. I mean, whether it's the goofy ones like fucking Patera, the redheaded stepson, right down to Savage, you know, with the cream of the crop, and, you know, your mustache is crooked, and the fuck it with the SummerSlam sign, and all the legendary Hogan ones, the muck of avarice, you know, Longfellow couldn't have said it better himself. Like just all the things you can rattle off the top of your head from Gene. Just iconic.
Oh yeah. He has a big list of iconic moments, and it's been nice seeing the tributes to him.
All right. So rest in peace, Gene, Bob, and Captain. And Mr. Dragon. So with that, we will, I guess, finally get into the meat of our show. And we're going to start with Raw, Chad, because we're coming off Survivor Series. That was our last episode months ago. we did break down Survivor Series 95. That brings us to 11/20/95 episode of Raw. So I will hand things over to you if you want to begin to walk us through.
All right. We are originating from Richmond, Virginia. Mm-hmm. Tonight, they start the show with some still pictures of the Diesel versus Brett match from the night before. Vince called it one of the greatest matches in history. And I kind of wanted to pause here. I don't know if we touched on it last episode, but I mean, I guess in WWF history up to this point, like, it would rank fairly highly, right? Like,
it had to.
I mean, even now, like, I don't know if there's that many matches in WWF history I'd have above that, probably 15, maybe.
Right.
Something like that. So,
the time, I think we did talk about it, its relevance as a world title match. But no, I think overall, I mean, there's not many pre-95. I mean, Savage, Steamboat, Razor, Shawn, the two. Maybe, you know, whatever the Patterson ones, maybe Patterson Slaughter, you know, Sheik Slaughter. Like, you know, there's a few there. Aaron George, Hogan Andre. So, you know, yeah, there's some in there, but no more than five or six probably ahead of it, right?
Yeah, Brett, I mean, I was kind of just rolling through. So, yeah, I mean, I'd have like Brett Owen and then Savage and Warrior.
Yeah.
And then the Steamboat Savage and then Patterson Slaughter and maybe the Patterson Backlund. But after that, it's pretty hairy.
Savage Flair?
Yes. Yeah, okay. I would have it above Savage Flair. I'd have it above Hogan Warrior, which may be blasphemy for some.
Brett Bulldog,
Hogan versus Macho, any of those. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, it's in there. It's in contention.
Yeah. Okay. The so, not hyperbole for Vince.
88 Survivor Series match that Scott so wants to give 5 stars to. So they, you know, for once Vince actually given a hot but moderate take.
No hyperbole for once. Here.
Yeah. And we get Pyro tonight. Mm-hmm. So spared no expense in Richmond. And Vince and King set us up. And they kind of immediately go to last week, which shows us the 1-2-3 Kid heel turn. We see clips from that. We get kind of a weird new clip in the back after the match of Kid and DiBiase hugging each other after he turned like in the locker room. So that was a little strange. But you know, they're really setting up Kid as this newly minted heel. And that sets us up for our first match of the evening, which is Hakushi versus the 1-2-3 Kid. Pretty good looking match on paper.
Yeah. Rematch from SummerSlam.
Right. Razor does a phone interview as the match starts. I always like how Razor says Mac-Man. I can't do the stereotypical Cuban accent, but it's always humorous.
It's almost like he says like Mac-Ming.
Yeah, Mac-Man. Yeah, it's a very distinct cadence that he says it in.
And he also calls the kid the Stick-Ming.
A fun opening with a fast-paced action. Hakushi gets the early advantage. Martin Jannetty runs out in leather jacket and jeans, and he tries to get into the ring, but the officials hold him back as we head to break. He's wanting a piece of the 1-2-3 Kid. When we come back from break, Kid has gained the advantage. He hits a splash from the top for a 2 count. Hakushi's able to come back with a tilt-a-whirl backbreaker to even things up, and then Hakushi runs through kind of some of his signature sequences, including the handspring elbow and a back elbow. He goes to the top and is able to hit the shoulder block, but Kid's able to kick out of that. I was glad Kid kicked out of that as a near fall. Thought that helped build some credibility
instead of like Ted saving him or something.
Yeah, having to be bailed out.
Yeah.
So back kick from Hakushi sends Kid to the outside. He climbs the rope, but this is where DiBiase comes in and shoves him off. And then we get a spinning back kick from Kid, gains the victory. So, I mean, this was a seven minute match. Very solid. You know, good opener. Felt like Kid worked well as a heel. Hakushi, certainly, as we talked about, has been cooled off from where he was when he debuted. But he was fine here, too. So I went 2.25 for this, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I went 2 stars. Like you said, it was a good little opener. Ramon calling in was good, too. They're keeping it hot. Like, you know, because you would expect him to be out here beating the shit out of the Kid. So they kind of set the tone that he's not here, and we hear from him, and he's pissed off still. So I thought that was good. Hakushi, like I said, he controlled early, and Vince is talking about how Barry's still teaching him his American ways. Barry Horowitz, yeah. So that's still going on, unfortunately. Marty's kept at bay. And then I thought the neck work was pretty good by Kid. Vince mentions that Diesel's on his way to the arena, so obviously you'll be hearing from him soon. And I thought Kid had the nice cutoff when he jump kicked Hakushi in the head while his other leg was caught. I thought that was nice. I thought the top rope splash for 2 was good. The crowd was into Hakushi's comeback. And then Ted does bail him out in the end, like you said, and then gives Kid cash after. I thought it was maybe like a touch disappointing. I think it just had more to do with the time and the way they're trying to establish Kid as more ground based now a little bit. I wish they would just change his fucking look. Like, him coming out with the same music and the look is just so goofy. Mm-hmm. And try to be this serious, you know, selling out heel. We saw it at Tatanka, we talked about it, and we're going to talk about it again here with Kid, I think, ongoing, that it could have really helped make him look more legitimate instead of, unless, I mean, I get that the story still kind of being that he's a baby and a brat because, you know, Ramon's like, you're my brother and you turn on me for money and because you want, you know, out of pride. So I think part of it is that they're trying to keep him looking like a young little punk. But I think it would have been better if they dressed him up and he's still, like, even if DiBiase gave him a coat that was too big for him, you know, like something like that. Like they're trying to make him look grown up and he still looks a little bit goofy, or at least they're trying. Like here it just looks like he's just, I don't know, just, it's such kind of a goofy name and gimmick to begin with. Like this was kind of a golden ticket for them to change it, get the 1-2-3 out of there or whatever. But, and DiBiase, this is kind of his last gasp at staying relevant. like it, I mean, this is it, I think. Well, I guess we'll see. They take a couple more shots coming up, but this is like, they're trying to keep him doing anything because this corporation is pretty much.
Yeah, well, he is wearing, I think, the last ranked of his suits on PAR's power rankings, where it's just the generic suit by this point, the preacher suit. So
that's, it's funny, disappointing. Someone on Twitter came across that article today and tweeted it out, how great it was, the suits of the Million Dollar Man.
Yeah.
PAR's legacy. Right, like here, the definitive guide legacy to the suits of the Million Dollar Man. This is glorious. Someone tweeted it.
There we go. Yeah, I mean, this match is just one of those things where it's also kind of interesting to look back at it in 2019 eyes, because, I mean, again, on paper, it looks like a real good match, but, yeah, I mean, it's kind of put things into context. Like, this would probably be the fourth best match on last night's SmackDown. Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of weird where we're at. Like, I'm certainly not one of these banging the drums like, wrestling's never been better than right now. I'm not saying that, but from a match quality standpoint, it's just weird to think about that. Like, you know, something like Samoa Joe versus Jeff Hardy last night was probably a better match, and that won't, you know, I barely remember that now. Whereas this was, oh, hey, a pretty good opener for Raw. Like, that's kind of a new thing. You know, I mean, we hadn't had a ton of these. Like, mm-hmm. they've been some solid matches, but this felt like we was getting the show off to the right foot. And then we get a little post-match angle, mm-hmm. too. So Kid cuts his promo with the King and DiBiase after the match, and then Marty again runs in, tries to attack, but Big Sid is able to give the save, ends up powerbombing Marty on the floor, which looked nasty.
Yeah, yeah.
But I thought this was weird. So Sid is powerbombing Marty, and the officials are holding DiBiase back.
Don't help
like,
him.
What, like, yeah, it's like, what's he going to do? It's like, wait a minute. This guy's like, send him up for the powerbomb. Why are you dealing, keeping DiBiase at bay here?
We don't want you stuffing money in his mouth while he's doing the powerbomb.
Yeah, so that was a little weird, but it looked good. And then, of course,
the, maybe they just know he's
George,
like a heat suck, and they're like, stay out of here. We need this to get over. If you're in the picture, it's not going to get over.
I'm sure Aaron George just loves the quick promo here that Sid spits out yelling. Yeah. That's what you get, you know, just in complete crackpot Sid fashion.
I think it's as goofy as it looks on paper, him being the bodyguard for the Kid and like his, the bully, like it's actually breathed a little bit of life into him, you know, like just coming out here and just being the menace for the Kid. When the Kid kind of runs afoul. Ted is
the
real proud.
The older brother.
Ted is real proud of Kid, by the way. Like, he gives him credit for beating the entire underdog team. He's loving it. He's loving his new meal ticket.
Yeah.
But no, I like the beatdown too. And Sid basically says, if you want the Kid, you're going to go through me. So
there we go.
That was an effective little segment.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. Then we jump right back to Doc. And Doc's also on the 10 here. So he's talking 50 miles an hour.
He's in the bumping slam jam.
Bumping into the cardboard cutouts of Brett and Sean. And they're right away, you know, hyping In Your House 5, talking about how much of a deal it is with the price point. They always want to get that in. And, you know, now we know the main event of that show is going to be Brett versus Bulldog. We get a short clip from SummerSlam 92. So, again, I was glad they touched on the history there.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they don't shy away from that at all, talking about the victory. And that you know, just inherently makes Bulldog look like a threat. And then, as has become accustomed with these shows, we get a Cornette and Bulldog promo. Mm-hmm. And they say their usual stuff. You know, not bad. It's been a good pairing that we've enjoyed. Bulldog says Brett has butterflies in the stomach because Davey Boy Smith has beaten him before. So, you know, another good promo from Davey. to set up that main event. And then also the Arkansas Hog Pen match is also announced in this segment. So the two big ones from In Your House 5.
Doc is busy. So he announces officially it's on December 17th from Hershey as well. So he mixes that in. And I really like the SummerSlam NA2 stuff. And it actually plays a big role throughout the whole build to the match. Like, they really hyped that as a big part of the build because it made a lot of sense. Bulldog beat him before, and it wasn't that long ago, 3 years ago. Bulldog beat him in the biggest match of his life. And so I think it's a nice way to weave it in. I'm glad they included it. And we'll see even more of that and how it plays out. It's interesting, too. Bulldog calls Hershey the scumhole of the earth. It's like the best. Like, Bulldog is like always like he has a good line and then he like butchers one part of it and just makes it real infamous. And like that's a great scumhole of the earth. It's like the vintage Bulldog. So I really like that promo. Yeah, we get the announcement of the Hog Pen, and then we also see Diesel arrive backstage too. So
yeah, Diesel shows a couple of dweebs. Also, when they did the Hog Pen graphic, it does say Hog versus Triple H, or you know, HHH.
Right.
So, I mean, they probably couldn't fit his full name on the graphic, but it feels like they're relying more on that name going forward.
Well,
and,
perfect.
They
kind of just said it the other night.
Right.
I feel like it's a while, though, before he references himself as Triple H. I think it's like another couple of years. We'll see. I want to say like 90, end of 96 into 97, I think, is when.
Yeah, we'll have to see when it really starts up. Now we come back. We do see Skip and Sonny in the ring. We get some shilling from Mr. Dedenski.
Still around. Shilling the he's with some chicks who are shilling the jean jackets for Undertaker, Diesel, Shawn, and Brett featured on the back of the respective
coats. These things were hideous. First off, he's wearing a raw turtleneck as well. So, yeah, it's a denim jean jacket, and it has the picture of the wrestler on the back. So,
oh, and it's not just a picture. It is like a full airbrush. Like, the entire back of the jacket is like this.
Straight, I mean, when you go to the beach, do they have, like, airbrush shirts and stuff? Is that a thing? Okay, because that's a thing in Florida. So, yeah, that's what this looks like an airbrush shirt you get at the beach on the jacket. So those puppies were $60.
Well, $59.75 plus $3.95 shipping and handling. There's a legendary one coming soon with not Barry, but someone else shills these jackets. And it's one of my favorite promos of all time. Like, I still hit the lines from it, like, to this day. It's coming. This is great. Like, that is, like, pure 95 WWF, those fucking things.
So that sets up our second match, which is Skip versus Savio Vega. Kind of two people that are not a whole lot's going on between them two. And that kind of sets up the angle we get here, as the match is basically 2 minutes of kind of back and forth until Diesel comes out. Diesel comes to ringside. Skip is on the outside and runs into Diesel, who shoves him to the ground. Diesel grabs the mic. He refuses to apologize, and he says that he isn't the corporate puppet that Vince decided to create. And this is a great promo for Diesel, where he says he's back. He has an immediate edge to him that he didn't have throughout his whole face title run. And this is really integral. I know there's a lot of praise that's heaped on Diesel for this run he's about to embark on. And you really see it here, where he just looks like such a a badass and a cool character that he didn't have, and really brings an edge to him. And, we're really starting to get into the attitude there. I mean, you're really starting to kind of see
some
of the seeds. You're starting to see some seeds planted from that, I think, with the table breaking and the way Diesel's character is, kind of dropping it, talking, they say Vince is the owner here. Kind of dropping just that knowledge that he's not a corporate puppet, a little bit inside baseball there. Vince had such an annoyed look during this whole promo.
It was good.
But I love this. I love this.
It was real good. Vince, by the way, I love how Vince always gets so fired up for Savio Vega! Here he goes. When he hears it, it gets all fucking heated up. Skip and Sonny didn't even get a fucking entrance. So, they're faded. Yeah. I love Vince's description of Savio, someone who takes no guff from anybody.
Oh, there you go.
No guff.
I haven't been too impressed with Savio from what we've seen.
He's one of those guys, I think, that in the moment, like, it felt like it was such a void of workers in mid 95 because of guys that were out, injured, missing. You know, like, I think he felt like nowadays you look at him as like, okay. But like at the time, it was almost like, oh, okay. They tell me he's a Caribbean legend and he seems like he's okay.
He legitimately is really, like, some of his Puerto Rico stuff is like great, like when he's brawling.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's really entertaining. But
I think he's got some decent stuff in 96. I mean, he's got the, you know, stuff with Austin and shit that's coming up. And,
yeah. Which I also think's overrated. Yeah. We'll see if that holds up.
So, you know, Diesel comes out. So he's got a leather coat, jeans, hat, and the iconic fanny pack going on that he always has for his big promos. And just like the sarcastic fake apologies just starts it off, right, with Brett and the fans. He says he got to the hotel room last night, and for the first time in a year, he slept like a baby. He woke up and saw a smile on his face for the first time in a year as well. Says he finally is himself, not the corporate puppet Vince tried to make him. Vince missed the ball, and within 24 hours of winning the title, he was at Titan Towers being told to smile, being politically correct and corporate by the suits. What we saw last night is just the tip of the iceberg. He says Big Daddy Cool is back. The guy we saw in Providence back at the Royal Rumble, this is him. Diesel puts the shades on and says the only family and friends matter, and that includes Shawn Michaels. And this is a big moment, too, because he carries us until he leaves. He'll only smack hands of fans who are wearing his black glove. And I thought this was like a marketing fucking genius, because I don't know if it was his idea or the marketing department's idea, but they sold a ton of those gloves because they're everywhere from here till he leaves. And you can only get the fist pound or the dap from Diesel if you got the black glove on. So I thought that was a real brilliant ploy right there. He says this is how it's going to be from now on. I thought it's fire and aggression that we've been missing, and he just seemed like dying to get this out. Like, you gotta think this was burning him for a while, at least. I would say at least since probably late summer, like maybe that Mabel disaster. I would say since then this has probably been really burning in him, and he probably got tired of eating all the shit, you know. Like, I think there's two things, right? The click was probably embarrassed by the direction the company was going, and two, I think he was probably felt like he was getting the brunt of the crap from the ratings being down, the match is sucking, and he's probably like, fuck this, you know, I'm not this guy, this is who I am. And they gave him the chance and he just nails it. I mean, this is just unbelievable promo from him.
Yeah, and they follow him to the back, which is cool. You follow him all the way to the back, he talks to Sean.
Do you feel like this promo's lost in time a bit?
I think we'll see how this character comes out. I mean, again, I think this character run has some good buzz and cred, but you know, I mean, this was certainly a good start. Like, I mean, I think Nash, the way his career has kind of went with being a political player and stuff like that, when he has excelled, it's kind of gotten overshadowed because there's so many times he's been in a position that he shouldn't have been in. You know, like breaking Goldberg's streak, stuff like, you know, like hogging the spotlight when he was Booker in WCW, hanging around TNA,
WWL. I mean, he catches a lot of shit for the click stuff.
So, I mean, to see him be in a position where he's over and he's at a level where he should be, and maybe even under, you know, I mean, he could have been champion, like, with this character from what we saw today. So, it'll be interesting to watch it play out. It was a great promo. And also we'll think, like, because this show is memorable for something we're about to talk about, that probably overshadows the promo too a little bit, where, like, your one lasting memory from this show is going to be what happens with Sean.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, this would be, like, segment of the night on any other show we've done, but it's probably not. Right, we'll get to it.
And it's crazy too, because, like, I get that they wanted to load the show up coming off Survivor Series, and you couldn't really let the Diesel thing burn a week. But I mean, when you think of those tape shows that come up, it's like this could have, like, really saved one of those.
Well, I mean, we see that, like, right after this, the clip, it's like, oh, Brother Love next week. Come on, guys, and Kama versus Taker. It's like, who cares? So
yeah, but I think part of it too is just, you know, burn it, right? Like, go out big.
Right, yeah, I mean, you're coming off a show that, I mean, WrestleMania 11 in real time was pretty maligned as an overall show. King of the Ring certainly was. SummerSlam certainly was. So they finally had a big pay-per-view in your house four. So they finally had a pay-per-view that was getting good buzz from the you know, the community at mm-hmm. that point in time. So yeah, I think it was smart to load it up, ride that momentum wave. And you know that your competition is going into their go home show. So you can kind of stunt that as well. Yep. So I would load it up.
Yeah. Agreed.
And right. I think that kind of leads us into our big main event. And this is a, you know, this is a nice main event on paper. It's Owen Hart versus Shawn Michaels. A good workman style match. And I don't know what you, I mean, I don't know what I would have expected going in, but I thought what happened coming out was really smart.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll kind of get into it. Now, I did think Mr. Fuji out with Owen Hart felt really random. I know he's part of the entourage,
right,
but
right.
It was kind of just strange seeing him out there waving the Japanese flag
right,
to
right.
Owen Hart.
Yeah, I guess he's kind of become his de facto co-manager since him yeah, and Yoko yeah. dope, so.
Right, right. So a really good opening exchange between these two, showing the athleticism. I thought Owen hit a great baseball slide on Shawn when he was on the outside. Vince calls the people in Syracuse hoodlums.
No, he's always, he calls them hoodlums.
Hoodlums. He is always hounding on all those thugs that beat up Shawn. German suplex from Owen gets to a lot of work on the head of Shawn here. Shawn fights out of the chin lock that Owen has applied, but gets hit with a spinning leg kick from Owen again to the head to regain control. We'll go from a break. Owen catches Shawn in a neck breaker on the head, leg drop for another two on the head. King calls Tony Randall his hero for him being 75 and marrying someone 25.
Well, so. If he was 76, he wouldn't be saying that because he'd be dead.
So a little foreshadowing of some of King's romantic exploits coming right. up.
So when did Tony Randall actually die? 2004 he hung on to. There you go. 84.
Wow. Yeah, there you go. Owen tries a superplex, but Shawn shifts his body weight down. Both are down, but Shawn kips up and starts hammering away. Flying forearm. And I did think, like, I was a little disappointed in the crowd for this
yeah.
match. Like they were not as hot as I thought the work kind of deserved,
because mm-hmm.
I thought it was a pretty, you know, a good match, and they just didn't give Shawn kind of the great reaction making his comeback. A slam and an elbow drop from HBK. He goes for the sweet chin music, but Owen gets the enziguri again right to the head. He goes for the sharpshooter, but Shawn rakes the highs. I like that from Shawn,
mm-hmm.
showing, you know, he'll take a shortcut if he needs to. Shawn sends Owen to the outside with a clothesline, and then, of course, the big moment. Probably one of the more memorable moments of the first three or four
yeah.
years of Brawl, easy. Where Shawn just collapsed. He collapses in the ring. Owen on the outside doesn't know what to do.
Oh, hang on. Let's talk about the match first, and then we'll get to
all
the
right, angle. So yeah. Yeah, this is the end of the match. I gave the match 3 stars. I mean, it's a good match. Was setting up to a good finish, but then you get the atypical, you know, finish to it, which – it's kind of one of those matches where it's a little bit tough to disassociate the match from the angle.
Mm-hmm.
I think the angle is so memorable that you might could rank the match higher depending on that. But
right.
As far as the match, it was a good main event and worked well. I thought Owen looked good. And like I said, he remained focused on the head of Shawn, which led to the big angle.
Tony Randall, November 1795, married Heather Harlan, intern in his theatrical program. At the time, Tony was 75. Heather was 25.
Yeah.
Lived in a Manhattan apartment, bought a vacation apartment in Key Biscayne, Florida in 2003. The couple had 2 children, one born in 97. So he would have been
there you go.
77. And then 98, he had a second. And they were married until 04 when he passed away.
So. Can you – I just can't imagine, like, if I'm a – like. If I was Caden's age and my dad was 81 years old.
Right. It's fucking crazy.
It's like crazy. Like, I feel old now at 32.
Yeah, that's old.
Yeah.
Old as shit. So, no, I did like this match. We found out a little bit about the card for next week, and like you mentioned, including the return of Brother Love, so we'll see that.
Yeah.
Shawn does get a big pop coming out for this one. I thought it was a crisp opening. I liked Owen hitting the baseball slide. After closing on Shawn to the floor, you mentioned Vince bringing up the Syracuse hoodlums, and he brings that up in relation to everything Shawn's been through. leading up to this match, or everything he's kind of battled through since really WrestleMania. He's had a kind of a tough year with everything going on. I thought Owens' offense was real crisp, where he works on the back and the neck. I thought they had some nice near falls. The crowd is, you know, when they did wake up, they were heated for Shawn. Otherwise, like you said, they're a bit subdued. Shawn goes to his comeback, and then we get into the finish, like you mentioned, the skin the cat, and that sets us up. So I thought they did a nice job. So like you said, Shawn collapses, and everyone just really slows down and completely quiets down. Even Owen, Cornette, and Fuji are kind of like standing around, like what the fuck's going on? And then Hebner fucking kicks at Shawn. He like kicks his arm, like to see if he's alive. You know, like if you find like a dead body down in the right, river or right, something, you like poke him with a stick. He's like, hey, you're doing all right. You know, kicking and nudging him with his foot, and then he kind of pushes Owen away and calls for help.
Yeah, they do a good job here, because this type of ankle hadn't really happened now. I mean, it's something we've seen so much now.
Right.
You know, where it just happened now, the referee be throwing up the big X and all this ridiculousness. And also, I mean, from watching shoot fights, we kind of know when somebody collapses, it doesn't really look like they have a big headache and then fall to the mat like Shawn does now. But I did think the acting here was on point, and it generated the correct reaction from the crowd, where you kind of have this look of bewilderment that Cornette and Owen, especially, I mean, Fuji always has that look, but Cornette and Owen switch it up to where it is kind of one of those, oh, this was a little off script, you know, without, you know, outright saying that. It's kind of played off a little bit that way.
Yeah, it's almost like not even that it's off script. It's almost that it's just like this guy actually is passed out.
Yeah.
And they don't know, like, I don't want to call it off script more. It's just like, okay, this guy's legit hurt, and we don't want to get in trouble for beating him up more. You know?
Yeah. Like they retain their heel persona, like they're not checking on him,
right? Sean's but kind of, they're Owen's sort like kind of just becking at him to get up, you know.
Mm-hmm, yeah, they're kind of just standing there. Then we cut completely to black. Come back from right as Vince gets in the ring. We come back from the break. We got the big oxygen tank rolled into the ring. Vince is looking very concerned. They apply oxygen to Sean as they show some replays of what's going on. And then they're really working Shawn over. The paramedics do a good job here, giving him some breathing treatments. There's a woman on her walkie-talkie freaking out. So a lot's going on. We pan to the crowd with the crying. So I mean, it really worked as an angle. I mean, people really, really bought into it, and it worked, and it was something atypical and really worked out. And I like the way the show finishes with just sort of,
right,
you know, Shawn laying down, and it just scrolls up, copyright 1995, and then we're out, you know, kind of to dead air. So I thought that was a good move as well.
Yeah, I liked all the silence. I'm glad they kind of had King shut up, too. You know, like, even with Vince, and they're like, he's not in there, like, jawing or anything. Like, it's just complete silence. Right. The crowd is in, like, tears. And it's crazy to think, too, that this is the beginning of a taping cycle. So, like, these fans had to come off of this, like, nightmare and sit through, like, another 3 hours of fucking Raw matches. So God bless them. We'll see if they're active at all in the future ones. But he, just really well executed. Like you said, it hadn't really been done before, at least to this level of seriousness. So I thought they did execute it well. It's something you hadn't really seen much of, especially in WWF. And it's a piece of that attitude that we've talked about is creeping in.
Yeah, I was thinking like Cactus versus Vader.
Yep.
Is probably like the kind of biggest comparison.
Well, I was thinking of Andre's heart attack. But even that was kind of campy. Like, they're making fun of him because he's having a fucking heart attack. So that, not so much. I guess, I don't know, I didn't really have not up my world class that much, but Fritz's heart attack, right, when they did that, and maybe something along those lines.
Yeah, well, I don't think we have tape of that, I don't really know how that plays off. But, yeah, I'm sure that caused hysterics.
Yeah. Yeah, oh yeah, for sure. So, Shawn ended up, he spent the night in the hospital, like, to really sell this. He's there all night, so he's getting calls and checking in on and stuff. So, you know, credit to him to really sell the angle. But a real wild Raw. I mean, just ton big moments, and really well done. Like, no real downtime in this one.
Yeah, this was a good Raw. So let's get into our awards. Mm-hmm. Match of the night, I think, is Shawn versus Owen, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And then segment of the night, are we going with the collapse or Are we going to do the upset with Diesel's promo?
So I split it. I went Michaels collapsing for the moment, and then I went with Diesel for the MVP. Because okay. I think that could fall under that. Like, his promo is what got him that MVP on the night. So it's like you're crediting him for that. The Shawn, as great as the Diesel promo is, the Shawn as a segment and moment, the Shawn thing is much more memorable. I mean, did you really remember that Diesel promo before you put this on?
No. Okay. Yeah, no.
You remember that. You knew it was the Shawn one, though, right?
Yeah, right.
That's how I think of it.
Okay. Yeah, I can go along with that. Yeah. Commentary lines, what do you got for us?
Just the two I mentioned earlier. Savio takes no guff from anyone, and he was attacked by 9 hoodlums, I guess you would have to say.
Okay, yeah, the only thing I made a big note of was King with the 75-25-year-old. So let's get into our rating. Kind of an interesting rating here.
Well, I'll be agreed.
Oh, yeah, you're great. I went 7 out of 10
okay.
on this.
I want to tick down 6.5. But, yeah, I don't know. Man, I'm rethinking. A7 is more like – I was looking at, like, what I had as the best TVs. So, like, I gave the Nitro on 10-16 with Guerrero, Benoit, Sting coming out to tag with Flair. Like, that was a 7. And that's the highest I've gone on TV. So, thinking about it, I'm going to go to 7. Like, I think the more we've talked about it, I think I probably underrated a bit. And I think it's at least on par with that Nitro when I think of everything that happened here.
And I have a – let me double – I want to check my source here. Let me see. Yeah, 2.3 for Raw. A little disappointing, yeah. Actually, as far as a rating, because it was 2.6 the week before.
Yeah, they had to be a little upset coming off of paper.
Down a little bit, and for a loaded show.
Well, we'll see next week if there's a bump coming off the angle.
Right. So there was. Let me just double check, but I would assume this is probably the highest ranked Raw I've done. Yes, it is. And actually tied for the highest ranked show I've done with Survivor Series and a Nitro in October.
Yeah, was it that same one? This one? Was it that October 23rd? October 16th, I mean.
Yeah, that's mine.
That was a good one. I went 7.5 on Survivor Series. That's my overall highest so far.
So I enjoyed this a lot. Good showing for Raw. So let's now, I guess, jump over to Nitro and see what they're up to. Pepe is with the cow print cowboy hat and vest. Always a classic outfit here. Not much besides kind of your standard opening between these two. And we jump into right this heated feud that has kind of been blazing up Nitro, which is Shart versus Norton.
Just one thing. So that's what I mentioned. We're in Macon, Georgia.
Yeah. Macon, Georgia.
I thought the hype early was like crazy. Like Bischoff is going nuts to open the show and he calls this the Super Bowl of wrestling. And he's really pushing how important tonight is because we're getting Sting and Hogan. Bobby says he's rooting for Sting to win. And then hopefully he falls and knocks himself out after. But I just wanted to call that out because they're really like hyping this up like a massive, massive episode of Nitro here.
Giving it big one from a massive metropolitan area in Macon. We'll be there next week.
There you go.
Norton versus the Shark. I didn't think this was much. So Shark attacks in the entrance as Flash comes out. Shark does get a belly to belly, which looks impressive, and he pounds away. But then Norton kind of just absorbs all of Shark's offense, hits a power slam, and gets the pin. So that was kind of it. Like all this angle they've been really building up and spending some time with it sort of just ended just like that. That's kind of how like some of these Nitro angles come and go. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, I mean, we get some conclusiveness, which is good, but I don't know. I mean, it felt like, I mean, I don't know. On one hand, it's like, I don't know what I want from these two. I don't really need them to have a 10-minute pay-per-view match, but it just felt a little bit abrupt that was that. I mean, Shart does get up after the pinfall and says he had his shoulder up and protests a little bit, but that's kind of it. I mean, he gave him his best shot. And
you think
Norton
that it's like
him.
Boil this stuff until they say, all right, we have 3 minutes this week. We'll get to it. I'm surprised they didn't just like blow it off on Saturday night and give him some time or something. You know what I mean?
Right. I mean, it feels like they could have done something a little more substantive somewhere, but There we go. I mean, let me see what I ranked as. Probably half a star. Yeah, so nothing there. I mean, Mongo and Bobby were in disbelief that he pinned him. So we did have that, but yeah, I mean, it was what it was.
Yeah, I went a star. I like the brawl. They're hard hitting. I like the belly to belly by Shark. I thought that looked nice, and the power slam was good too. So for as big as a Haas sprint, like, it was fine. So, and it's good. Like, I don't think this needed to go like 5 minutes or 6 minutes or anything. Like,
yeah, that. Yeah. I mean, that's one of those things. Like, it's like, yeah, I don't want to protest too much because, again, I don't need a really long match, but
right.
That's kind of weird.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we get an interview segment with our boy Mean Gene and with the Taskmaster and Jimmy Hart. Jimmy and Gene, that's also a pairing we didn't really touch on, but that's kind of a memorable pairing with each other. They went back and forth a lot. You little runt and all that. So Jimmy really tries to stir up a lot of trouble in this promo. He's talking about how Hogan got Macho to be the co-star in his latest movie, I guess Thunder in Paradise or whatever, instead of Sting. So he's really trying to kind of create dissension among the ranks between them two. And then I didn't think Taskmaster has a few of his rambling thoughts, but nothing really new here, just how smart they are, and it's going to be the destruction of Hulkamania, so forth. So nothing new from him.
No, and Jimmy says he's rooting for Sting. He's really driving that wedge. I think he references Baywatch, unless I misheard it.
Oh, yeah.
He says that Savage is his buddy on Baywatch.
Yeah.
Basically, Savage is Hogan's new best friend, but really, he's always been his best friend. Not Sting.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Like, this Hogan-Sting pair, it's like, you know, I don't know where they became like these best bros.
And it's not like Hogan was in WCW for like years with Sting before Savage came in. Like, it was like 4 months, whatever, 5 months, and then Savage is there.
Like, all this established history that they had.
I like how Gene calls them pieces of garbage when they go to leave.
Like
one of my favorite. That's more of a gorilla line than a Gene line. That's one of my favorite pieces of garbage.
Everybody's cheering for Sting. Bobby's cheering for Sting. Jimmy's cheering for Sting. A lot of Sting fans in the main event tonight.
Everyone hates the Hulkster.
Yeah. So our disco music. Well, we go to the announce booth again for some more hype. Bobby again gives another. Bobby was kind of dialed in for this match though. He was really trying to hype it up. These two going against each other. Mongo and Eric look so annoyed at him talking about how they're going to be going after each other and tearing each other apart. Pepe is with Mongo still, so he stayed with him throughout the whole duration of this episode, which is a little different. And so there we go. The Disco Inferno's music fires up. Our weekly segment of him kind of coming out and dancing. Everybody disgusted at that. Eric's
trying to pawn CDs.
Yeah, he has his little CD. And then he gets chased away by Eddie Guerrero to set up our second match of the night. This was a good-looking match on paper, which is Eddie Guerrero versus Brian Pillman with Flair. It was supposed to be Eddie versus Flair.
Right.
And Flair comes out in shades, looking completely hungover in his sports jacket, struts down, basically says, "Nope, you're getting Flying Brian." And then, like, hightails it to the back. So he couldn't even be bothered to stay around ringside for this.
Yeah, and his reasoning is, he kind of laughs, and it's like, yeah, no way, I'll fight you tonight. Yeah. He says he's focused on Sting at World War III, so the pill's going to have the honors.
That was kind of, you know, a cheap move, but it seemed a little silly. Like, the player just is like, okay, have at him, and then he basically hightails it back.
I guess the only thing I'll say for them is I don't think they sold TV tickets based on announced matches, at least. So it's not like, at least this wasn't like a bait and switch where they were, you know, selling tickets based on a Flair versus Eddie match. So
yeah, I can't remember if the week before, because, you know, they usually do the rundown in the final minute. I don't know if we got the graphic or not, but yeah. Either way, I mean, whatever. Pillman starts off by taking off his red jacket and adding, like, you know, like a matador with Eddie to run through it like a bull. So some great racism right out of the gate from a Flying Brian.
Oh, and Flair also says Double A and Benoit gassing up the jet.
Gassing up the jet.
Have the Hooters girls ready to go.
catching up the Jets. So
do you picture,
yeah, they're
one
just
going to
leave Pillman.
Yeah. Which one did you picture Gas and the Jet? Which one's getting the Hooters, girls?
Probably, I don't know. I guess I would like to think maybe Arn was sweet-talking the ladies. That would
I guess
be
it
enjoyable.
Both ways. Like, I like to picture Benoit with, like, because he's such an awful, like, dresser and shit. Like, just, like, with the leather coat with the fucking collar pops. And he's, like, got the big hose just pumping into the side of the fucking plane. But then I can also picture him, like, stomping into a Hooters, like, you girls are coming with us. Just, like, pulls him out.
Hey, ladies, when I say get up, you come.
Right, so it's just, I could picture it either way. But it was just a funny visual when he said it. Double A and Benoit gassing up the jet, getting the Hooters girls ready to go.
That's code for they're not here. So where the big boys play from Merrick as the match starts off. Good chemistry between these two. Pillman gets a power slam for a near fall, and he's really cheating when he can. He is such a dirtbag. Like, any cheap shot he can get in, he does. He spits on Eddie at one point, gives him the horseman signal, and Eddie just, like, tackles him and punches him down. So I really enjoyed that. Eddie gets suplexed to the outside. Pillman goes for a dive, but ends up hitting the guardrail with a lot of authority. That looked nasty. Mm-hmm. And then Eddie did a huge plancha up the ramp, up the entranceway, which looked great. They go back, they battle up top, and Eddie is able to shove Pillman out and hit the frog splash for the pin. So another, you know, as we've talked about the prior week, another good Eddie Guerrero match on Nitro. Probably match of the night. Ended up going 2 3/4 on this one. I didn't think it was one of the, you know, tip-top Eddie matches we've seen. But another good showing from him, kind of a sneaky run he's been on. Pillman is just a despicable heel around this period. So, you know, mostly good character work from him and an enjoyable kind of cornerstone match for this Nitro.
Yeah, Eddie's really been that low-key workhorse for Nitro. I mean, every week he's out there, and they're giving him time, and he goes out there and delivers every time. So this, you know, Eddie Flair would have been fun, but Eddie Pillman just as good. The slugfest was good to start. I like that tight back suplex Eddie gets. Bobby shits on Guerrero, but then he says everywhere, because he goes, everywhere I go, they're talking about him. I'm sick of hearing about it. Bobby... is Bobby ever at peace, like, anywhere? Like, wherever he goes, he's just getting hounded, and it's about all these variety of topics. Everywhere I go, they're bringing up Eddie Guerrero's name. Taking a piss at the Longhorn. Pillman starts to bite and maul Eddie after the collision in the air. You get a lot of shilling of World War III. I thought Pillman's power slam for two was nice. I thought, like you said, the plancha off the top was great. And then I like the brainbuster inside, too, that Eddie hits. But he gets caught, crotched up top, and then we get the frog splash. It was really fun. Were you surprised that Eddie won? Like, I was a bit surprised the way Pillman's getting pushed. Yeah,
that was a little bit of a surprise again. I mean, I guess it makes sense with Flair leaving, but I mean, again, it feels kind of stupid, like that he just dipped out, and now it's Horseman stablemate lost clean.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was weird. With the push Pillman's getting, even though Eddie does get respected, like, he gets a lot of these wins. It's a little surprising that the Horseman's taking the loss before World War III. But I love Pillman as a heel. I mean, he's just brilliant in this role. Like, he's just such an asshole. And he's like kind of like Diesel. Like, you could tell he probably had this boiling for, like, years. And I guess we did see some of it with the Hollywood Blondes. But even since then, it's like he loved it so much, and then they took it from him. And now he gets to go back to it, and he's not letting go. He's just the way he just gets in your face and screams at you. And this is, like, nonstop ball of energy. And from here, really until... I mean, I think until his death, but if you want to call, like, his real hottest streak is right here until Austin Pillmanizes him, like, and then the gun stuff. Like, that year, years worth of character stuff for Pillman starting here is, you know, stuff in the spring, and then his ECW run, and then his first ODF stuff is just, like, iconic character work from him.
Yep, I agree. What'd you go rating-wise?
Same as you, two and three.
Okay. There we go. So we hear who's going to be on WCW Saturday night. It is Lex Luger, Disco Inferno, VK Wall Street, and Hugh Moore. So quite the crew. Yes. Quite the crew there. We get clips from the Savage attack last week showing that with the big elbow drop and everything that happened at the end, kind of the ending angle with the Dungeon of Doom and then Luger coming out. Posting the arm and
where does
the big ankle there?
Where does the WCW Saturday Night robot music come in for you and like the iconic themes? To me, it's pretty high. They blast it like during those little promos here.
Yeah, ramps up. It always ramps up and then peaks right as you see VK Wall Street. So,
and I always loved there. I used to love the intro. It would get me pumped on Saturday nights with the fucking robot arm opening the door.
WCW has good themes. Good themes.
Underrated theme.
All systems operating within normal design parameters. Engage cybernetic generation sequence. Yeah,
so then we get our third match, which is Road Warrior Hawk versus Big Bubba. Kind of a weird old school feeling match.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there wasn't much of a feud here, I didn't think, but
Survivor Series 91, Survivor Series 91 teammates explode. Yeah. It's actually a rematch.
A lot of bad blood here.
It's actually a rematch from October 9th.
Oh, there we go. So another kind of month long.
And we won like a quarter star on that one, both of us.
Yeah, so it's like Flash and Norton, where they had to pull apart like the second Nitro and then came back a month later. To revisit it, but we get our second where the big boys play as Hawk misses a dive from the top. Bubba has something in his pocket that he puts back in. You couldn't really tell what that was. Hawk again misses a top rope move with a shoulder block. And then Bubba tapes his fist with the weapon, but I really hated this finish. So, like, he tapes his fist with the weapon, but then Duggan comes out, trips Bubba up, and he lands on the weapon. Like, he basically has to take a bump onto his own fist.
Right.
Hawk pins him. So, it looked as contrived as, like, the chair shot that boomerangs off the ropes and hits you in the head that I really hate. Like, this was even probably more dumb than that. So
have you ever fallen on your fist?
Just a really stupid... finish that didn't work, and I still don't know what it was. It looked like it was like what holds the paper, like the toilet paper, like it was like this weird wood stake thing. But I don't know what that was or what it mattered. And like I said, the finish was just completely dumb with him falling right on his fist, which made no sense. Paul pins him. I ended up going a star on this, which kind of feels generous in retrospect, but.
He should have, like, grabbed... What if he'd have grabbed Bubba's own hand and hit him with it? You know what I mean? Like, something like that.
Or
hit him either fucking board. I don't know.
Could have done something. Anything.
Right.
Than what we had.
Bobby mentions one-man gang showing up for World War III, so I thought that was interesting. But he thinks Luger and Giant are the favorites. Bischoff wonders if someone will show up at World War III that nobody expects, just like when Lex Luger left the WWF. So he's hyping the potential mystery appearance there by someone. Yeah, like I said, Bubba, it's really just Bubba using the foreign object. I like the Spinebuster. Like, I thought that looked okay. The crackheads, and then you get the shenanigans at the end. I thought a couple of decent shots. They're really sloppy, miscoordinated a bunch of times, including the finish. I'm not really enjoying Hawk in this run at all.
He's not
really bringing much to the table. And this sets up, I believe, Duggan and Bubba will be fighting it. I believe they're fighting at World War III. So.
Oh, there we go. Look forward to that.
They do. It's a tape fist match, I believe. So.
Oh.
Hyping the gimmick.
Would have been good in about 1987, probably not 1995. So then that kind of leads us right into our main event, right? Sting comes out in the red and yellow. And then Hogan. Oh, God. So Hogan's music fires up. Macho comes out on the entranceway. Hogan comes up from behind him. You know, a complete heel move. I mean, what else can you say? But instead of attacking him, and plus he has that ridiculous Zorro type mask.
It's like a sleep mask. Like a sleep apnea mask or something. Like you fucking No, it's like when you try and sleep on a plane and you put the little thing over your eyes, like that's what it looks like.
Yeah, it looks ridiculous. But he just stands there, actually cups his ears to the crowd. Sting has to look like an idiot, like he can't tell that somebody's doing something behind him. You know, Macho's just on the ramp, like, pointing to the sky, doing nothing. And then Hogan doesn't even attack him. He basically just, like, pads him on the back and is like, let's go. So, I mean, why couldn't he have done that? You know, just come out regular and done that. So, that was stupid. But here we are in our big main event. I mean, can you believe they blew this on a Nitro?
A go-home Nitro. A go-home Nitro, like, kind of buried at the end. you're hyping the pay-per-view. Like, it just, yeah, it felt like real weird placement. And I did, they were just so obsessed with giving the big matches that I don't think they thought anything of it. They probably just figured they'd run it out there again. Like, they seem to be the type that, like, we're not going to wait and sit on these money matches. We're just going to unload them and make this a must-see show. And we'll just keep unloading them and unloading them and unloading them.
It's quite crazy to think about that this happened on. I mean, because even, you know, in retrospect, like, obviously you wouldn't have thought this would have been the biggest match they had, like in a couple years. But, I mean, still, this is a big match. I mean, obviously this is a big match. So they kind of pound away to start. Hogan still has his mustache shaved off. Bobby's cheering really hard for Sting. They brawl on the outside. I thought Hogan hit a good-looking suplex. And then he nearly follows that up by nearly whiffing on a clothesline back inside. But you know, I mean, we've been really tough on Hogan for this run. But I thought he did some neat work here where he does a neat arm capture that pulls Sting to the mat into an arm bar.
I thought that looked like a backyard wrestler trying to do one.
Oh, I thought that was great.
Like, yeah, I don't know.
He never does that.
He doesn't, but I think there's a reason.
And the suplex,
it was like a fucking slow motion.
This was Japanese wrestling. That was a legit amateur wrestling takedown. I will defend the Hulkster there. I thought that looked really good.
Yeah, one quarter speed maybe.
Better than most court angle takedowns in 2000.
All right.
So he locks on the arm bar there. Pulls on an arm capture. It's just stuff you're not used to seeing.
All right. I know. Point. Yes, I know.
Okay.
I'll read all about it in the Voices of Wrestling.
Also locks in a full Nelson for a second. How about that?
Yeah, that was good.
So Sting fights back, hits the Stinger Splash, but Hogan's able to catch him in the bear hug. I mean, that's the stereotypical Hogan move there. But I thought Hogan was clearly working as the heel here.
Yeah. Like,
there's no doubt. He's taunting the crowd when Sting is wincing in pain on the mat. Now Hogan does barely make contact on the elbow off the ropes. That looked really bad. Sting makes his comeback proper and locks in the Scorpion again as the babyface of this match. Hogan's able to hulk up and starts his comeback, but he misses the leg drop, which usually spells doom for Hogan. The crowd popped big for that. Scorpion is done by Sting again, and Savage yells not to give up. And then we get the DQ. So we got some post-match stuff, but let's talk about the match itself. I ended up going, I think, 2.25 for this one. Enjoyed it. I mean, I thought it was pretty good. Probably the best Hogan's looked in this run. So, yeah, not bad.
Yeah, I went to Sting has red and yellow on, and Bobby calls it a slap in the face to Hogan. I took it as Sting's not like a underhanded shot guy, like a backhanded slap guy. To me, I thought he was doing it because he wants to show that he's still friends with Hogan, like that he's not getting dragged into this because he's kind of been a guy that's playing all the sides. So, but Bobby really plays it off like Sting's like, you know, throwing his dick out on him. Bischoff says the fans are on the feet for Hogan, which is great because it's complete silence as he comes out. And then you get the stuff, like you said, with Savage, who had his arm in a sling. So I like that continuation of the selling there. And then Hogan comes out with the sleep mask on and the dark outfit and just so much overacting by Hogan. The crowd's just booing the shit out of him. And then the Sting turns around and they go face to face. Like, this is just more Hogan, like, thinking this is what a dark man would do, like these quirky mind games. Sting will never see it coming if I'm behind him, brother. Like, it's just like everything he does is so fucking cheesy and corny. Bischoff doesn't want to see these two pillars of importance to the children go at it. If kids are watching wrestling, they want to see wrestlers wrestle. Why is it bad that these two guys are fighting? The pillars of importance, like they're fucking slashing throats. I mean, what the fuck on. Although Hogan has talked about murder. Yeah. Mongo compares it to two brothers settling an issue, which I thought was a good comparison. Bischoff, a lot of hype for World War III as well. Keeps talking about various promotions around the world will be sending competitors to the big battle royal, so they're really pushing that. Hogan just gets booed throughout the whole match. Bischoff talks about their bond, says Sting helped convince Hogan sign with WCW. He really is like on the fucking verge of tears in this, honestly, Bischoff, as he's announcing this match. Just talking about these guys like they've grown up together, which is just a little bit over the top. You got your backyard wrestling, like you mentioned, stuff there. Bobby, of course, never one to shy away from the racism, says they're coming from all areas in rickshaws, cars, jets, and planes to World War III. There you go.
Rickshaws.
Hogan blocks a Stinger splash, and then more booze there. Fights with the Scorpion, powers out, like you said. Boot, Stall, misses leg drop, Scorpion again, Dungeon of Doom all comes out. That triggers the big brawl. I thought it was just a shit ending. I thought the match was fine. Kind of sad to watch the crowd just shitting over Hogan as he did his whole act at half speed. Sting was trying, but nothing was really meshing. I thought overall, that was just my take on it. Like, Hogan's just doing whatever he can, and the crowd just wants nothing to do with him. We'll see weeks where the crowd's into him, and it really seems to depend on the arena at this point for him. Because there's been times that it's been hot for him. Last week, I think we saw it, and there's a couple more to come where the crowd's super into him. And then you get shit like this where they hate him. Like, they're just booing everything he does. And it's sad to watch him kind of meander through the act like it's just, you know, expired. So anyway, after the match, the dungeon gets cleared out. The Giant shows up and grabs both men. Savage comes in with a chair for the save. He gets choke slammed. Hogan and Sting use the chair to wipe out the Giant. Jimmy and Kevin are at the booth yelling as Bischoff calls for security. Anything else you want to add to that post-match brawl?
No, I mean, I liked it. I thought it was good. I mean, again, made Giant look really good, look really strong. Savage hits him in the chair, but is in pain with his arm, and mm-hmm. then Giant choke slams him, and takes Sting and Hogan kind of teaming up to take out the Giant over the top rope.
Yeah, Savage's selling of the arm has been consistently great. I thought it's been really good. And like you said, Giant has been really well protected and just looks like a monster here, wiping out everyone until the chair takes him down. They've really booked him really, really well since his debut.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, agree. So I enjoyed that.
But I thought this is actually right. Maybe the worst night, one of the worst night shows we've seen. I didn't really.
We'll get into it. I didn't think it was that bad.
No, I didn't.
Your Hogan hate has went too strong here.
He was awful. All right, match of the night.
Match of the night. I am going Eddie versus Pillman.
Yeah, same here. Moment.
Moment of the night. There wasn't a great one. I'll probably go with the ending angle. Giant looking strong.
I went with Flair's promo. I loved it. Gassing up the jet, the Hooters girls, like just like laughing at Eddie's face. Like, I'm not wrestling you. I thought that was really good. He was my MVP.
Flair?
I mean, moment. That was my favorite moment. My MVP was Guerrero.
My MVP is actually the Hulkster here. Ugh. I thought he was pretty good in his working a different type of match. Mm. Probably the best he's gotten to be a little bit edgier. Sleep mask aside,
he's been terrible. Commentary lines, two of the biggest pieces of garbage I could ever recall was Gene's line about Sullivan and Jimmy. Because they're right there when he says it too. It's so good. He didn't give a fuck.
That's pretty good.
Mongo says your opinions have a lot in common with my feet. They both stink. And then he says, put your glasses on, old man. Do we need to get you a rocking chair? He said that to Bobby. And then of course the rickshaw line from Bobby as well. So, dad's dat there. A couple of shots fired. I had wrestlers that are no longer part of WCW as of today, Bischoff says on the hotline. So was that Vader? When was he officially released?
Maybe.
I'm trying to think of who else it could be. The way he said it made it sound like someone who was released like that fucking day. Like, you know, no longer with us as of today.
I would think that would probably be Vader.
That's all I can think of that was...
around that time, yeah.
Yeah, Wiki just says he parted
his release.
Yeah, Wiki just says he parted ways shortly after. So I don't know for sure because I mean it's right after this, not long after he's announced on Raw. So
right.
Timing wise, it seems. If anyone out there knows what Bischoff is talking about, let us know. And then the other one he said, if you're flipping back and forth, forget about it. All you're doing is watching a commercial over there. So that's what Bischoff said there. And for final grade, I went 4.5 out of 10 on this one.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not much higher than you. I went 5 out of 10. I mean, I didn't think it was one of the better episodes, but I enjoyed the main event. I mean, the finish was what it was. Like, I certainly wouldn't have came in with an expectation that we were going to see a clean finish in that main event. And the Guerrero-Pillman match was pretty good, too. So, there you go.
I've had some Raws lower than that. The lowest Nitro I had was 9.18 the second.
Oh, yeah. I think there's definitely been... Yeah, there's definitely been Raws worse than this.
We had a 4. Sure. I had a 4 out of 10. We had a 2.5 out of 10. 3 out of 10. Yeah. So we've had some bad Raws, but to me, this is the worst Nitro we've seen, top to bottom. And then no debuts, no dropped angles that I noticed. Right.
No, I think we can kind of go into our combined awards. For overall match of the night, I assume we will go with the HBK versus Owen match.
Yeah, I think so.
Best show, we're both going Raw.
Yep.
Best segment, Sean collapsing.
Yep.
Commentary.
I'm actually a little torn here because I thought Bobby and I thought they were pretty good, but Bischoff's like crying over Hogan and Sting was like overkill, and I thought Vince like did a good job with all the Diesel stuff and the fallout from Survivor Series. So I was just Raw's night, and I thought the Nitro commentary was solid, but I just couldn't get over the overhyping from Bischoff, and then it instantly makes you like not even want to watch it. Like the story's like, you know, oh my god, these two guys are fighting and they're doing this in front of the other kids and all this. It was just like way too much.
Okay, Star.
And it's like if they were brawling, I could see it, right? I mean, if they were like, you know, murdering each other, why are you doing this? You're friends. But I mean, Hogan's working the cross arm breaker. It's like, oh my god, these friends are going at it. You know, it was just like a tame match. So anyway,
right.
Yeah, Star of the Night to me is Diesel.
Okay, and then our Nitro. I mean, our ratings winner is actually Nitro.
There you go.
So this is kind of the reverse of what we've seen a few weeks, where Nitro swept the board and Raw's been the ratings winner. This is kind of the inverse of that, where once again, kind of surprisingly, Raw has swept the categories, and Nitro ends up winning the ratings 2.5 to 2.3.
Well, it's always interesting to see. So next week will be a good battle because you're coming off a real hot Raw, but you're also going to be coming off World War III. So we'll see there. We had one quick piece of feedback from our buddy Jay Hinchy. I don't recall too much about this Go Home Nitro other than the first meeting with Sting and Hogan. I know you guys have touched on it. Just going to say, what the hell is going on with Hogan around this point? The dark stuff and off-the-wall promos. Raw post-Survivor Series is one of the ones I've cherry-picked from the network. A very good main event with Shawn Michaels and Owen Hart with the infamous head kick. Was there a reason it took Shawn off TV after he'd just come back from Syracuse? I think it was pretty much just hyping the arc to Mania, right? And I don't think he's having actual issues.
I mean, I think this is kind of the jumping-off point to his Mania arc. So there you go.
So thank you for the feedback, Jay. And we should mention our message board, Bigelow34.proboards.com, back up and running. A lot of good discussion there. Lately, we kind of doing a question of the day. We'll talk about our next project that's firing up there. But also, it's going to be the home for the Warzone feedback threads as well, because it's easier for us to track there. So if you go over to that message board, you don't even have to be a member. You can be a guest as well to leave feedback. If you go to the Place to Be Nation section, there's a section there, Place to Be Nation Wrestling Podcast Discussion. You click that, and you'll see the thread right there for Wrestling Warzone Podcast Feedback. So throw your feedback there or on our Facebook page as well. If you search Wrestling Warzone, that'll come up as well. So you can leave some feedback there as well. So our next episode, Chad, will be looking at World War III. So have you seen that anytime recently? Or
not in a while. Yeah, okay. I was going to say, I have not seen that one in a while. So I'm looking forward to it. I don't really have any strong thoughts either way. So pretty neutral going in.
Okay, very good. Well, we'll see how that. I didn't think they had a very good. They did hype it a lot, but I don't think they had a great.
I mean, it certainly feels like a concept show first and foremost. So we'll kind of see how well the concept is executed with WCW. More times than not, their concept shows are pretty lackluster. I'm looking at you, Battle Bowl. We'll see how this one pans out.
For sure. So, all right. Real quickly, we'll just mention with the GW tag team ballots having closed, we want to thank everyone who participated. The results will be coming out in the next few weeks as we compile and put the pieces together. But we want to thank everyone who voted, especially the late flurry the last couple of weeks. It was nice to see the bump we got. So thanks for your participation there. We'll also be kicking off our next project. Like I mentioned, it's at the Bigelow34.proboards.com message board. It's called The Year That Was. We're going to be doing kind of yearbook style through the year of 1996, really focusing on North America with a dabbling into worldwide as well. There are threads there explaining the rules of engagement as well as an official nomination thread. So you can go in there, you can post suggestions for everyone to watch, and then we're going to break it out by month. We're going to make a watch list. A lot of the stuff is on the network. And then there's going to be threads for each of the stuff we're going to watch, and we want to go in there and we're going to share thoughts as we watch them. And then at the end, there's a bunch of categories we're going to do, like best show, best wrestler, best this, best that, and worst as well. So we're doing the best and the worst of 96. Anything you want to add to that, Chad? You know, I know you've done a lot of these kind of yearbook type things before.
Yeah, I mean, I think 96 is a cool year to start out because you really see a lot of change in WWF. You really see WCW become super hot. But the beginning of the year can be a chore. So I can just say, like, from doing the yearbook, don't get too discouraged. I know, like, February and March especially were kind of when I was going through where it was like, oh, you know, this is supposed to be a great year, but not much is happening here. So just stick it out, and the back half of the year is just great. I mean, even with, like I said, with the WWF side, I think they make great strides in the back half of the year, and WCW is just on fire, of course, when the NWO kicks off. So, you know, we're, you know, with this podcast right now, we're about a month behind starting out. So hopefully we can catch up a little bit and get on like a real time, you know, where we're in February of 2019 talking about February 1996, and we're around that same point on the podcast.
Yeah, no, it'll be a lot of fun. So we're looking forward to it. So please come in and participate. And the nice thing here is that you don't have to – it's not like a rush. You can kind of do it at your own pace. But we're also going to be doing watch nights. So keep a eye out on our social media and on the board as well. We'll be doing kind of throwing one out. Hey, Friday night, we're all going to watch, you know, Royal Rumble 96 or, you know, whatever it is. And you can weigh in on the stuff that's on the list there. So keep an eye out for that if you want to be part of those discussions and project as well. So, again, thanks for all your support in 2018 across all of our feeds, PlayStation Wrestling, PlayStation Pop, and PlayStation.com as a whole. Subscribe to all those. Be sure to rate us and leave feedback. And also be sure to leave feedback, like I mentioned earlier, for this show at World War III. We'll read that on air on our next episode, so be sure to bring that. So anything you want to plug, Chad?
No, I think that's good.
You can check out the Where the Big Boys Play from the Vault. Should be picking back up this weekend. I've enjoyed that. I think I'm caught up. I got through the rest of Starrcade 86 today. So,
yeah, I'm trying to decide when I think the show really kind of hits its stride. I would say it's probably around 87. 87 into 88. We start getting more guests. I mean, some of the guests we had, some were better than others, as you'll hear through the shows. But I think that's really when me and Parv became more comfortable with each other. And I know from like 88 on, I felt pretty good about most of the shows we did.
And if you want a real contrast from like modern day, well, at least like recent Parv versus that, it's really funny to listen to. Like him like really starting to explore and learn about a lot of this stuff is pretty funny.
Oh, yeah. Before he knew everything.
Right. So check that out. That drops usually every Saturday on the PlayStation Wrestling feed along with all of our other shows. So we'll be back on the PlayStation podcast next week as well, looking at, God, what the hell are we? I think the December 88
MSG. 88, so. Yeah, MSG, yeah.
So peep that, and of course check out the most recent No Holds Barred that dropped on New Year's Eve. Aaron and I did a live watch of the movie New Year's Eve to ring in the new year. So we go on a lot of tangents, so I was proud of that one. I thought it came out pretty good, so check that out. Other than that, we'll head out. We'll talk to you soon, and we'll take care and smell the napalm.
I'm them all the beauty they possess inside.